Hello. Welcome to Integral City Meshcasts. This is one of a series of free podcasts exploring the new way to look at the city. We think about the city as Gaia's reflective organ, and as such, the city is a living system, like the beehive is to the honeybee, the human hive is to humans. And we are interested in how to evolve the human hive as Gaia's reflective organ. My name is Marilyn Hamilton. I am the founder of Integral City Meshworks and the author of the book Integral City, Evolutionary Intelligences for the Human Hive. Today we are delighted to continue our interview series with Peter Mary. Peter Mary is located in the Netherlands. He calls himself a Synervator. In 2005, he founded the Center for Human Emergence, a vehicle for exploring how to apply an integral perspective to society and cultural transformation in countries ready to take the next step. In 2008, he also founded the Hague Center for Global Governance, Innovation, and Emergence, through which he is playing a key role in the State of the World Forum's 2020 Climate Leadership Campaign. Peter is also the co-founder of Wisdom University in Europe and the author of Evolutionary Leadership. So I'm actually with Peter Mary today, and we're walking around the Netherlands in an eco-village where he lives. And Peter's actually giving me a guided tour. Hi, Peter.
Hello, Marilyn. Yeah, we're in Everlangsmeer, which is a neighborhood of Culemborg, which is a town fairly central in the Netherlands, about 25,000 inhabitants. And the ecological neighborhood is around 200 houses and businesses, the first of which were put up about 10 years ago. And we just moved here last October. So, as you can see, there's no cars in the main area. All the cars are parked on the outside. Sedum roof here on the garage. The architect was anthroposophically inspired, which is why you've got kind of funny shaped windows sometimes. There's obviously solar water heating and photovoltaic panels on a lot of the houses. They're built in such a way that they're pointing to get maximum sun capture, and the materials in the houses are ecological. There's a lot of wood. In fact, we're about to walk past one of the new houses that's being built here.
And I can see that there's lots of lanes, and in the terms of, oh, there's even chickens. Yeah. So I was just going to say, in terms of Jane Jacobs, there's lots of eyes on these streets.
Yeah, lots of eyes. And, you know, they're designed in such a way that when you walk out of your house, you bump into other people rather than walk into your car. And so it's, you know, you naturally meet people. So most of them are built around courtyards. We'll walk in a minute, I'll show you another one. So that you have, everybody has their own, they've got a good combination of your own privacy and shared collective space. So you have your own bit of garden, and there's a shared courtyard which often has shared facilities for the kids and things as well. Actually, in front of us, we'll walk past it closer in a minute, but there's an orchard, very old orchard there, and then there's we have a kind of collective harvest party. I think it's going to be towards the end of September.
It looks to me like it should be very soon. I came up on the train and I noticed, as I was going by fields close to here, that the trees were really full and they look like they're early ripe, because those are very red apples on the tree.
We've had some pears already from the orchard, so but the apples, I think, need a little bit longer still. I can see here big wooden architecture of the houses.
Wood and also brick, I see.
Yeah, the brick, and I'm not quite sure what kind of brick. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it's kind of ecologically sourced or in some form brick.
Well, we had an encounter with brick in another Dutch town earlier this year in Almere, right, where it was actually an issue for how they were maintaining the garden city there, because they had chosen brick 30 years ago that really didn't stand up to the weathering. This looks like it's all in pretty good shape.
Yeah, this is pretty good shape. So here we are, we're in another courtyard here, like the one behind our house, and you can see there's a kind of shared area, there's some swings, there's a shared sandpit there, a big three-sided picnic table where people stand, and I think there's a kind of bread oven or something like that we also have in our courtyard. So it's a good mixture of the private space and the public space. And the people who live around these courts have shared ownership of the public space as well.
So in Canada, we would call it like a strata title. Is that the kind of... that means that you basically own everything inside your house, but you have shared ownership of everything outside.
That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But one thing I can notice about your place here is that there's a very different age group than where I live, because this is a place made for families and kids by the looks of it.
Yeah, it is, and it's, let's go down here, and it's mixed as well. So you'll see, we'll walk past a little later, a place that's been made more for older folks. So it's apartments, but also has shared facilities, like, you know, if people want to come and stay, there's some spare rooms that people can stay in, but not everybody has to have their own spare room. So they've tried to mix it up, and you'll see a bit further down, they just completed, actually, some social housing, so for folks with lower income, both rental and to buy. So they're trying to get a diversity of people in the neighborhood as well.
And do the people who live here tend to work locally, or do they work in other parts of the Netherlands?
I think it's a mix. Quite a few people work from home, and then Utrecht is very close by, you know, 20 minutes on the train, and as you noticed, the neighborhood is 3 minutes walk from the train station, so it's very ideally situated. The nice thing about the place is it's centrally located in the country, and yet, as you see, you've kind of got a bit of a country feel out here, because it's a small old town.
Yes, it's very charming, and I was really curious when you told me that you were moving here. Is it hard to find a place like this? Had you been looking for a possible resale in this area, or did it just come up in another happenstance?
No, if you want to buy a house here, you have to be part of the foundation that is the citizens' group that kind of co-manages the neighborhood. So it's basically run between this foundation and the city council. They work together on the planning and the development. And if you buy a house in this area, you have to be a member of the foundation. So we've been on the list for about 5 years or so. And occasionally different houses had come up, but they weren't in our price range or the timing wasn't right. And then this one just fitted perfectly. So this is the back of the older folks' apartments here, which look out onto the orchard and things.
That looks really nice. I know I'm in a situation in Canada where I won't even give you the size of my footprint and where we live, but it is also a strata title, much more groomed than this. So. But I'm at a stage where I'd really like to downsize, and there isn't anything like this.
Yeah, no.
How can you give me advice about how to import this into Canada?
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know, get the plans, you know.
Well, I've never heard of a organization where you belong to a foundation in order to have access to the opportunity for the kinds of housing that we're looking at here. How did that start, do you know?
Well, yeah, it was the vision of a woman, basically, who started it all. And part of what happens when you sign, when you become a member of this foundation, is that you sign a paper which basically is an agreement around certain behaviours. So the water goes through a reed bed filtration system, for example. So you're not allowed to throw chemicals down the drain. You have to park your cars on the perimeter. So there's a number of practical behavioural things which you have to sign up to as well. But the idea was that embedded in the sustainability vision was a sense of the community co-running the place as well. So it being a kind of joint accountability between the people who actually live here and the city council.
That sounds really intriguing, because what I'm hearing you say is that really people who participate here have a real vested interest in it. Not only in its success, but the quality of life that's here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've just walked through the orchard, and then we've walked into an area, kind of a strip of trees here, which has just been thinned out. But the locals say this is very much the place where the fairies hang out. So it's a little grove. And then the other side of this is the second half of the neighborhood as well. So it's kind of split down the middle by a big green area.
One of the things that I'm really enjoying is that we're walking along a gravel or a cinder path here, and we pass through the streetscape that's between the building units. But I get a real sense of country here. So you had told me it was an eco-village, and when I came into the train station, I was thinking, oh, it's actually part of a fairly built up cities, but now it's hard to see any city around.
Yeah, that's right. It really feels like, I used to live in The Hague, and it felt there that the nature was embedded in the city, and here it really feels that the town is embedded in nature, and it's just kind of completely different experience. And the way they've designed it is also very much permaculture inspired too. So you see this house here was actually, they got a bunch of European volunteers through a European community program to come and help build it. Big experimental building. And on the ground floor, there's a small school, which is Steiner inspired, has about 40 pupils in it as well, kind of mix of Steiner and Montessori approach.
So you've got people who are not only thinking and intellectually connecting to very advanced and complex stages of living, but you're actually creating structures and behaviors here that really support those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the, you know, there's to actually have a physical manifestation of some great ideas makes it very powerful. And we often have international groups wandering around this place as a model of what a sustainable neighborhood might look like. And compared to somewhere like Findhorn, which is beautiful in its own right, which is an intentional community but is set apart from the local community, this is, to all extents and purposes, really another neighborhood of Kulumborg, of the town of Kulumborg.
One of the things that strikes me is that the architecture is quite varied.
Yeah, so this side is called the Pioneers Field, and there were lots of different experiments. So this one here is kind of heated primarily by that big by water. So it's the temperature of the building is regulated by water. That was the experiment there. And then these ones are all houses built inside greenhouses. So if you look at these, they're called kind of greenhouse houses, and which means you have an outdoor area, and which you can also use in the winter, you know, for growing things and playing in. So what you got to imagine if you're listening to this is basically a big long greenhouse that then has inside it wooden houses.
And do you know if this was actually a greenhouse before the houses were built in it, or was it designed? And it sounds like a crazy question, but which came first?
I think it was designed in this way, yeah. I think it was designed in this way.
This is sort of a reminiscent of some of the ideas of Bill McDonough to actually use natural heating and light systems as part of the structures.
So they're trying many different things here, and you can see here, like, it can open in the summer, it lets the heat out. And then over opposite us now, we've got, this is literally just completed not that long ago, is a social housing that I was talking about, which means it's much cheaper. It's a set of apartments to rent and to buy, to try to also increase the diversity so to show that the sustainable vision can be, just have to be for folks who've got the resources, but can also be applied to people on lower incomes.
And would the rest of the housing be sort of at market values?
So there's a full range, really. Now, particularly now that you've got this accommodation here, there's a full range of pricing here. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk across the road. I'll show you the city farm, which has community-supported agriculture concept behind it. And then we'll walk back up around. And so here on the right, there's a big square pink building with lots of windows, which wasn't originally designed to be, but is now a childcare centre. So it's kind of after-school childcare, where they also all eat organic vegetables, and they spend their time outside messing around in the mud and often across at the farm and things like that. So
the kind of things that kids used to like to do but are apparently here still allowed to do, if not encouraged by the looks of it.
That's right. You're warned when you send your child that, you know, they will get muddy. So expect that. And one of the other things here, you can see there's kind of some reserved car parking spaces here. There's a scheme called Wheels for All, which is a car share scheme. There's about 10 to 12 cars scattered around the perimeter of the community, which you can just hire. So we don't actually own a car, but we have at our disposal 10 to 12 different size cars and vans that we can rent by booking online. And then you pay a set subscription fee. And then you pay an amount per kilometer and per hour. And then you don't have to worry about the upkeep of the car and everything else. So that works out really well.
That also is something that I devoutly aspire to, but I don't know if we have the density sufficient to where we are.
Yeah, no, that's true. It does depend on certain conditions, yeah.
So now we're crossing over a busier road into the agricultural area that's owned by the city, is that correct?
Yeah, it's a local city farm. It was the initiative of some people who live in the neighborhood. And you can sign up and sign up for a vegetable scheme. So you know, every week we come and pick up our vegetables here, vegetables and fruit, which they grow here. They've got a mixture of more traditional organic agriculture combined with an experimental permaculture section. They also keep sheep and I think some horses and chickens and things like that.
That would explain the gate that I just walked through, which I recognized as one that discourages hooved animals from crossing, but which I crossed rather gingerly.
Yeah, and it discourages high heels as well.
So you're talking about the vegetable that you can get here, is it like a basket or do you subscribe to the farm output so that they have dependable customer before they start planting?
Yeah, that's right. So you pay a certain amount per week so they know that they're getting a certain amount of income, and you go and pick up a bag of seasonal vegetables grown here organically every week. They also have a little shop where they also stock organic food from other places in the Netherlands and also sometimes other countries as well.
Oh, and they even have greenhouses here. Boy, that looks like a very good crop of tomatoes I can see growing there.
Tomato crop, and they also use it. They also have people here working here who have certain handicaps, so it's what they call a kind of care farm as well. So it has a strong social dimension to it as well. They have families that are invited occasionally to come and help out on certain weekends. There's a big harvest party here at different times. Yeah, so it serves as a point for the community as well to come and the kids to kind of see what it's actually like, how the food grows, you know. And
that it's not just sort of something that shows up in a store in a box or behind some cellophane.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the whole feel of this place is very embracing, and you feel, as you pointed out, that you're so close to nature, you're in it, and so this must be given the kinds of work that you're doing, the opportunity to de-stress and renew is just right out your back door, literally.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm just noticing there's a bunch of kids, obviously from a local school over there, so it also works very well as an educational place for children too.
And tell me a little bit about how close those schools were for your children, because again, that was really impressive when I was just walking over to your place from the train station.
Well, right opposite our house, we've got a primary school, which is based on something called the Jena Plan, where they have different age groups mixed together as well. So my son, who's 6 years old, has just got into a class which has 6 years old, 7 years, 7 year olds and 8 year olds all mixed together. The vision is one where has a lot of collective and ritual and that kind of thing embedded in it. It's not formally Steiner, but I think you see quite a lot of inspiration. And then the creche was also just across the road. Everything's pretty close, which also is very handy in terms of transport and things like that. And the centre of town is, you know, 10 minutes walk away. It's just a small town with 25,000. Very old, actually. The city, in the city centre, the old town hall goes back to 1300 and something. So.
Well, it must feel really comforting. We were talking a lot about the family and belonging value systems before we started our walk, and I just feel like this is a place you can just sort of sit back and relax into in that respect.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it makes a huge difference to when we were living in The Hague, and although we had some good friends and things, you know, when you walk out the door, you're in the concrete jungle, whereas here, when you walk out the door, you know, it feels like you're embedded in a natural environment. And the kids can just walk out the door and you don't have to worry because there's no cars around, and they can walk around and go out onto the street to play.
What about entertainment for adults?
Well, in town there is a theatre which, you know, hosts films and stuff. The swimming pool is very close as well. But a lot of people are young families, you know, a lot of the adults are in that phase as well, where you kind of hang out with each other. Like the other day, I think it was the Friday evening or something, we walked into our courtyard at the back, and we have a little thing where you can make a fire. And we started a fire, and the kids kind of came out of the other houses, and some people brought marshmallows and sticks, and so we kind of, the kids were toasting marshmallows, and all of that happened. The kids went to bed, and then the adults returned with some beer and some drinks and things, and that kind of thing happened spontaneously, spontaneous gatherings. And, you know, sometimes people would just sit outside in the collective garden and bring their dinner, and other people will join them. Or if you don't feel like that, you can just sit at home and do it by yourself. So there's no kind of unspoken rule that you have to do everything together. You know, right. There's a good respect for each person's private space, and at the same time, the invitation is there for the community to do stuff together.
So, Peter, we're approaching actually a building that I think has what you called a sedum roof on it before. So in North America, I don't think that's really a well-known phrase. Can you just describe for people what it looks like and why? What's useful about it?
So this has got, these are roofs which have plants, low kind of plant growth on them. So they do different things. I mean, obviously, when your roofs are covered in plants, they have the effect of absorbing CO2 and things like that, like from this truck that's driving by us. Also in terms of absorbing the sun's, reducing climate change and that kind of thing, provides for a different kind of biodiversity in the system. So you basically, you know, on a lot of these roofs of the sheds and things, you've got these green roofs, which have, I guess it's low growing plants on them. And it means that instead of that, you know, you losing green area or vegetation area, you actually kind of reclaim it by putting it on the roofs.
The kind of thing that Chicago tried to do by mayoralty request or edict. Yes,
okay.
Mayor Daley said that he was going to make Chicago the greenest city in the world, but this looks like it was conceived from the beginning of the roof construction, which probably needs to be considered when you
choose to build it. It can be quite heavy, so you know you need to make sure that the roof is strong enough to hold it. And the other thing, as we walk through some puddles here, is that, you know, the place has been constructed to absorb lots of water. We're in a river area where two rivers meet, and the place has flooded before. So what they do is it's a big water catchment area, and it's all designed so that the water goes into ponds and stuff, and that water can also be reused and recycled.
One thing I've also noticed in the Netherlands this time round, I don't know whether it's because I haven't been back at this time of the year when everything is so lush, is that many areas along roads and ditches that would be seriously mowed in North America here have been allowed to grow kind of wild. Is that something that has been accepted in the Netherlands as sort of a way of greening the space and probably lowering the cost of maintenance?
Yeah, I think out here in the kind of smaller town areas, it's probably more natural, but I noticed it in The Hague again recently, and my wife, I think, said to me, oh, it's a government policy now to stimulate kind of wildflower areas and not to mow all everywhere between the roads and on the sides and things, and to let stuff grow there. Obviously, it saves labour, but also it increases biodiversity. So there's a lot of questions around how to increase biodiversity in cities, make sure that the living places don't become heat traps either, but can better absorb heat and water, depending on, you know, as climate gets more extreme, that we can absorb the extra rainfall, but also green spaces provide a kind of umbrella, as it were, for the city not to heat up in.
One thing I've noticed as we've been walking around too, I'm just starting to see some bicycles come out, probably because the time of the day is towards the end of the afternoon, but there are delivery trucks that come into this space, and I would imagine there's sort of maybe some rules or only some particular areas where they can go to, is that correct?
Yeah, there's certainly only particular areas. I'm not quite sure if there's a timing agreement, but we're now standing by a kind of small lake pond with lots of reeds at the side. And the bridge we're standing on serves as a place to be able to fish off, so the kids are often standing here fishing.
And what do they catch?
I don't actually know, not huge things, but last time some of my son's friends were here, they got 15.
Good heavens.
So threw them all back.
But, okay.
there's a little kind of beach there where the kids swim.
Right now it's full of ducks, looking very happy, fat and happy, because there's lots to eat around now.
And this all freezes over, you see, in the winter everybody comes out and ice skates here.
Oh, what fun. And I notice it's all lined with reeds, probably natural reeds, but they also clean the water, right?
That's
They're
right.
depolluters.
That's the function, yeah. Yep. Maybe we'll just pop around the corner here and we get to see some of the another more innovative houses that have been actually built into the hill.
You have hills in the Netherlands? I didn't know that that was possible.
I think these are probably made from some of the stuff that was left over, the earth that was moved, build some of the community. We're right on the edge here now of the ecological neighbourhood. So there's some buildings over there. There's a secondary school that's very close. It also is taught in bilingually, in English and Dutch, which is handy for my children.
So as your children mature, you're not going to have to leave this area to get schooling for them. The schools for the older kids are also around here.
Yeah, absolutely. Very close by, you know, for them. In fact, this school was once voted the best secondary school in the Netherlands. So people come from quite a way around. But local kids get priority if you sign up. And so for ours, it's a very short walk.
One of the things I'm curious about is how many people are there in this neighborhood in the Eco Village?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I'm not exactly sure of the numbers, but if, you know, there's about 200 houses and most of them are families, I don't know, 600?
600. And how many people would belong to the foundation, do you know?
Well, it will be the same because everybody who lives here has to, except for the kids, of course.
Right. Okay, now we have some, I would call these hobbit houses.
Yes, hobbit. I call them hobbit houses as well. They're kind of built, literally built into the hills, into the kind of mound, I would say, rather than hill. Again, another experiment in sustainable architecture.
Is so, this like in Canada, we have rammed earth houses. Would these be that kind of thing?
I guess so. Yeah, I don't actually know the details, but there's about four houses here set into the mound. They have a shared courtyard in the middle as well. And my son always tells me as I go by that there's a big hot tub in here, but I've never seen it. I don't know how he knows.
And just for those who are listening, I'm looking at a set of four very wide plate glass windows looking out onto the lake with the reed edges that we were talking about. But there's also the roof is completely covered by the vegetation that looks like part of the hill from any other perspective. And it just looks like the whole, when I look into, peer a little bit through the windows, that I can see kind of like curved walls inside. So it looks very, very pleasing.
Yeah, it does look like a hobbit place, really.
Like the Shire, right?
Like the Shire, yeah.
Well, Peter, I think that we've had a wonderful walk around, and the only thing that I regret is I couldn't balance my camera at the same time that I was trying to balance the recording device here. So when I was just talking with Peter as we were allowing a lady to bicycle by on a very tight path. Is this a gated community? No, it's not really. It kind of blends into the rest of the city. And it really is on a scale that I think it would probably take, I don't know, a good hour to walk around the perimeter of this.
Oh, yeah.
And much longer to zigzag through all the paths and the walkways and roadways.
Yeah, yeah. And so as we're just coming up to a building here, which is and also has its own kind of courtyard and things, specially designed for people with a physical handicap. So there's also that kind of facility here. Again, another attempt to bring in more the social dimension of sustainability.
So that must be a really unusual opportunity for people with disabilities, because you would think that there's only sort of blocks and barriers to how people with disabilities could enjoy this kind of an environment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. I mean, they've really kind of thought about the vision, and the woman behind it originally now had a very strong vision. And in fact, she said to me today, it'd be great to, she was aware of some of the energetic work I was doing, to think about how intention and manifestation worked in her process of bringing this place to life. But you can, the whole roof of this one-story building for the physically handicapped folks is covered in the sedum as well. So it's just a big field in a way.
It looks very beautiful. It's got patches of different colors of green and russets and a bunch of yellow flowers in bloom. So it looks just like a field on the roof. We're being passed by families on bicycles going somewhere with some intentionality.
What we're just walking by here is the water playground, and it's off at the moment. But what we're looking at is a kind of raised hill which has a number of big bowls in flow forms that they're known as, and these are also used to vitalize water, and then rocks and kind of stone pathways, and the water flows through these different pathways, and on a warm day when the weekend or when the kids are out, there's kind of loads of kids playing in this water playground, splashing around or sitting on the fountains and having the water kind of bubble up under their bottoms, as it were, and playing with boats and things. And it's a great resource to have. And just, I know that the forms, they're these kind of bowls, which I don't know if you've ever seen these flow forms before, but they give off a vital energy when the water flows through them. And it's just a beautiful, twinkly place to be when you've got the water flowing through and the kids playing.
Oh, thank you. It is really beautiful to look at. It looks like they're sculptural forms down this. It almost looks like a labyrinth,
yeah.
A water-based labyrinth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can imagine the kids sitting on those kind of little toadstool like. It goes well with the hobbit houses, right?
Yeah, that's
yeah?
Right.
Hobbits.
Beautiful. Hobbit kids.
And so, was this designed by somebody in the community, or was it like an idea again and somebody attracted it?
I think it was a vision held by this woman, and then worked with a team of, I think, different architects and city planners and things. I don't actually know the full story of how the whole thing came to be conceived of and implemented in collaboration with the city itself. So, yeah.
So I noticed actually a truck that looks like a waste management truck ahead of us here. So there must be some also system here for wastewater as well as the...
Yeah, it could well be, unless something got blocked up somewhere. We've had a lot of rain recently. I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. But it's not yet so far that the whole water is completely recycled within the community itself.
Right. Well, Ina was telling me that actually this is all below sea level too.
Yeah, it is.
Yes,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Quite remarkable. Thank you. So now we're standing in the back of Peter's place, where we're looking at the courtyard area that he and his neighbors have created. And there's not only what looks like a pizza oven and a triangular picnic table, which is ever so much a better idea than just having a long one that you can't see the person at the other end, full of pears. And the pears, I can see the pear tree over there. And these trees that are surrounding us are all espadrilled together, so we're like in a circle of trees that are maybe from about 6 feet to 12 feet, all leafy and feels like a bower. It's very beautiful, and it doesn't cut off the sight lines that we can see in the rest of this little courtyard. I can see a very happy cat over there.
It's sitting on the cover of the sand pit, so that's a giant sand pit where the kids...
Protected from a bit of rain these days, yeah.
And this is a water pump, which actually works.
Wow.
So as you can imagine, the combination of sand and water is of great delight.
This whole place seems like a kid's paradise,
for
sure.
It is, yeah. And if it's a kid's paradise, it makes it an adult paradise, you know, because they just disappear and look after themselves. And you know they're safe because there's not lots of cars running around.
Right. So thank you once again, Peter, for this tour that doesn't seem to want to end. There's about 16 families around the courtyard.
Yeah, in rows of these houses which are kind of curved around. And then there's, I guess, probably another 15 or 16 apartments, maybe about 30 houses in total around the courtyard.
So there's a lot of diversity in just this little node in the community.
Yeah, also. And, you know, it's not everybody messes into the collective thing. Some people keep themselves to themselves. Some are more or less active. But it seems to work.
I like it.
And here we've got our, here's the bins for the black for the rest of the rubbish.
For green. Recycling.
Yeah, green bins for the organic waste, blue for paper, and then they also collect plastic here as well. So you can separate most things, yeah.
It's an eco-village in action, not just name.
It is, very much in spirit.
And I can see, now that we've come back to your front door, what you pointed out to me when we first came in. There's a beautiful wall opposite, and somebody has actually created a whole mosaic.
Yeah, it's Gaudi inspired, I think, by one of the women who used to live in the street, actually. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Now that I look, I knew it was reminding me of something, but yes, it definitely looks like a Gaudi wall.
Yeah. And in the winter, you can see it more. Now it's summer, all the kind of bushes and things are blossoming. But that's nice, because then in the winter, when that all dies away, you've got this beautiful, colourful, mosaic, windy wall to look at instead.
Because it has the Gaudi curves to it, yeah. And also the emergent art. So the mosaics on it are quite shiny, but they're blue and they're reds and yellows, and it's very attractive. And I can see how somebody might want to just continue to allow it to emerge. Yeah.
I ended the tour with Peter back in front of his own residence. And as I said goodbye to him, I was really struck with how beautifully Eva Longsmere actually lives like a human hive. I could see all of the evolutionary intelligences in play as we walked around, everything from the contexting intelligences where the eco-village had been well situated within all the considerations of its climate, of its living cycles, of its emergence from the geology in which it was located. It had also implemented much of the integral model, taking into consideration individuals and both their behaviors and actions and their inner intellectual, spiritual life, as well as the collective relationships and the structures that had been designed from the bottom up at Eva Longsmere. I saw that the community had emerged from agreements that came out of inquiry, out of forms of what I do call meshworking, and even navigating, giving feedback to themselves. So that the evolutionary intelligences that are alive in Eva Longsmere are real, and they belong to the people who have co-created them. So I thank Peter, and now that I've been inspired by Eva Longsmere, can see the kinds of conditions in which I'd love to live. So once again, Peter, thank you so much. It has been just wonderful sharing your insights on how to make the integral city Gaia's most reflective organ through the tour around Eva Longsmere in the Netherlands. I'd like to tell people how to get in touch with you and find out more about your work. So I'm going to just refer them to you at your email, peter@humanemergence.nl, humanemergence.nl, and they can also find out more about you at your website, Center for Human Emergence. If you would like to learn more about the Integral City, you can find out about us on the web at www.integralcity.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at integralcity.com, or blog me at marilyn.integralcity.com. Thanks for joining us for today's Integral City Meshcast, and we look forward to you joining us for the whole series of free podcasts. Goodbye for now.